management an important part of green housing? As Rebecca mentioned, green housing initiatives in the past traditionally have been looking at the environmental footprint of buildings. But I think there's an opportunity with the healthy housing movement and green housing to find an intersection between the environmental impacts and the health impacts of the way we build and manage houses. At EPA, when we look at doing environmental interventions for public health interventions, we really focus on low-income communities. And we know that there are 6 million homes in this country with moderate or severe housing conditions. We also know that Americans spend most of our time indoors. And in terms of pest issues, we know that half of residents in affordable housing, which is Section 8 and public housing, have problems with insects and rodents. Pest problems, again, this chart is to show how pervasive pest problems are in urban multifamily housing. This is from New York City, and it basically shows the percentage of households in New York reporting cockroaches by ethnicity, race, and household income. Infestation leads people to use pesticides unsafely. There's an incredibly high amount of the use of foggers, sprays, and bombs, pest bombs, in urban areas, and that's because people get desperate, and nobody wants to live with cockroaches or rodents, and they take matters into their own hands, and they use products that are that create significant exposure issues. Sometimes they also use illegal pesticides, and if you look at the pictures here, these are pictures of a couple of illegal pesticides. These mothballs, I mean, you can see this one, the candy in the middle looks very much like the mothballs on the outside. The picture on the right is something called Chinese chalk, which is something that's imported illegally. You draw a line on the floor, and the roaches aren't supposed to go across the line. They die when they cross it, but little children can mistake Chinese chalk for chalk to play with and pick it up. The other products that I have mentioned up there are sold in local bodegas and markets, and they're very commonly used in urban areas like New York, Boston, high-density populations, especially immigrant populations. A little bit about pesticides and asthma. I don't have to tell this audience how big a public health issue asthma is, but one of the things that you might not know is that pests are a significant asthma trigger, and according to Ken Olden, who used to be the director of NIEHS, he said that cockroach allergen is the principal contributor to childhood asthma in inner-city environments. Yet, in spite of the fact that asthma is such an important, or that cockroaches are such an important asthma trigger, what we also know from a survey that EPA and HUD did together is that fewer than 1 out of 10 asthmatics even know that roaches can trigger asthma attacks. So there's a huge information gap that we need to fill there. Pesticides, you know, people always want to reach for a magic bullet, but pesticides are really not the answer. And there's just a few myths, you know, that when I speak to people about pesticides, people assume that if you can buy something at a local store and it's approved by EPA, it must be safe. They don't realize that pesticides are inherently toxic and need to be treated with really utmost care. The way we are in this country, a little bit is good, a lot more has got to be better. So people just tend to really, you know, keep on spraying until the bug drowns in the liquid. And that's not the way that pesticides are supposed to be used. There really is no magic bullet. And, you know, better living through chemistry, I think that's probably not the answer, especially when it comes to pest management. So the reality of pesticides are that they are designed to kill living organisms, and what that means for us as living organisms is that they carry some level of risk. There are acute health effect issues, including poisoning. There are about 70,000 children poisoned by pesticides every year, according to data that we get from the American Association of Poison Control Centers. We also know that there are chronic health effects, including neurological effects, developmental delays, and cancer. And the reality, of course, also is that children are much more vulnerable to the health effects of pesticides than adults for a lot of reasons. The way their bodies work, the air that they breathe is closer to the floor where pesticide residues can accumulate. Another thing that we know at EPA is that in spite of the fact that we try to make sure that we carefully label these products that we register in my office, we know that only 1 out of 4 people, consumers, even bother to read pesticide product labels. And if you've ever tried to read one, you almost need a PhD to be able to understand the words, and it's written in very small font, so it's easier. People pick it up and use it and tend not to read the labels. What we do know is that the best way, and really the only way to achieve effective, sustainable, and safe pest control is through prevention-based methods, and that's what we what I'm going to talk to you a little bit about. This is just a quote from an article that came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It was authored by Jerry Blondell, who used to work in my office, who's a big proponent of integrated pest management, IPM. He wrote this, this quote comes from an article he wrote promoting IPM as the standard pest management practice for schools. So the goals of greener pest management are basically more effective and sustainable pest control, reducing exposure to pests and pesticides, and improved health and quality of life. There's a lot of drivers these days for greener pest control. There's much more consumer awareness of the benefits of going green, and that extends to household products, including pesticides. There's a green buildings movement in LEED. There's a whole healthy housing movement that I'm involved in, working with CDC and with HUD to promote kind of an integrated approach to looking to addressing and mitigating environmental health hazards in housing. There's a lot of local law and regulation that's kind of serving as a driver for IPM. At the same time, my office, in the way we are looking at the products that we register, there's an evolution and there's a higher standard for registering pesticides than there was 10 years ago. And so some of the older, more hazardous products like that DDT that was shown on the screen that Rebecca showed, the mother that was spraying above the child's crib, that was DDT. Well, that's gone from the market, as are a lot of the old organochlorines and some of the more dangerous organophosphates. And the industry, the pest management industry, is actually seeing all of this green as an emerging business opportunity. So we're also working with the pest management industry. So historically, the way people have done pest control is they did it based on you'd get a contract with a PMP. It's a pest management professional to do pesticide applications on a regular basis, whether you have pests or not. They come in once a month, once a quarter, whatever. Sprays were often used indoors, even though they can aggravate respiratory problems. The old standard was spraying along the baseboards. Toxicity and hazard of pesticide products was really not a consideration in the way pest management practices were carried out in the past. And what we call broadcast applications, which is not just targeting your spray, but just basically spraying the entire house or the entire room, was pretty much the standard. We also used to look at pest control as something that we could just turn over to an exterminator and really not worry about ourselves. And it's not that simple. So just a little bit more detail on this. I mean, in old-fashioned pest control, we assume that anything that crawls has to be killed. That's not necessarily the case. If there's just one or two, you might want to physically remove them. If it's a spider, you might not want to kill it at all. Spiders can control other bugs. IPM is a proactive way of controlling pests. You look for the pests. You're constantly on the lookout for them. If you're not using IPM, you really wait until a problem comes up and you resolve it. And that's not really the best way to do things. IPM uses multiple tools. You can't ignore the importance of keeping a clutter-free home, keeping a clean home, making sure pests are excluded from the home by blocking holes or creating barriers to entry, and eliminating what we call conducive conditions, which are the things that pests need to survive. They need food, water, and a place to shelter, harborage. And if you can eliminate those things, you're much more less likely to have an environment that's attractive to pests. For the old non-IPM approach was basically just using chemical controls. Again, using IPM emphasizes the use of reduced risk pesticides such as gels and bait formulations, things that don't create as much exposure as the old as sprays and foggers. Non-IPM uses broad spectrum pesticides, and again, with anything that could be another kind of unintended consequence of pesticides is that besides killing non-target organisms, they can also create resistant strains of pests, and leading to more and more use of pesticides, which ultimately is self-defeating. Again, IPM concentrates on spot treatments, just targeting your pesticide application in areas where you need where it's needed, rather than applying pesticides in large areas. And it very much emphasizes a team approach, which I think we'll be hearing more about when we hear about the Boston Pest-Free Housing Initiative. I just wanted to mention three programs that EPA has kind of been working with and promoting in a way. This is the pest management industry. This is the pest management industry kind of stepping up to the plate. When it comes down to pest management, ultimately, unless you're going to do it yourself in your own home, if you're going to deal with a large building, a multifamily housing project, you're going to need to hire a PMP, a pest management practitioner. And one of the questions we get most often is, how do I find one that's qualified that really knows what he's doing? So there are three programs that we know of right now, and I think they're all good to varying degrees. Quality Pro Green is the program that's been set up recently by the industry, the National Pest Management Association. It's good. It's an evolving program. We're working with them on training, and I'm really happy to see them do this because they are the umbrella organization for exterminators around the country, and have got a lot of people very very interested in this as a new kind of market for their services. Green Shield Certified is run by the IPM Institute of North America. This is a very high quality program. It's a little bit more expensive to get yourself to hire a Green Shield Certified applicator, but it's probably the Rolls Royce of the programs. EcoWise is a program that's run out of the San Francisco Bay Area. It started in the San Francisco Bay Area, and now certifies PMPs, pest management professionals, throughout the state of California. So if you're here from here in California, EcoWise might be something to look into. Just a couple of examples of successes that we have seen through partnerships that we've worked on in EPA. Here's an example of a multi-housing project in Cleveland, Ohio, where we had serious infestations, roach counts of more than 240 in six units of an 18-unit building, more than 1,000 in two units. This is not unusual. This is cockroach problems can get really out of control. But through an IPM intervention, we were able to achieve a 95% roach reduction. We actually have to count these things in sticky traps before and after we do the interventions, and 100% reduction in three units after three PMP visits. So this was done through a combination of, we used baits and gels and traps. There was no sprays, no bombs, a lot of tenant education and helping tenants get their units prepared for the treatment. But it can be done. So there, that shows an example of IPM succeeding in a place where with severe infestation problems. This is just, I wanted to show you this chart because this kind of shows you, we count cockroaches in this business. It's really a glamorous job, but this shows the cockroach population in an intervention in Norfolk, Virginia, going down through IPM. It stayed down at a very low level. What happens if you have normal pesticide treatments is that you'll get a knockdown of the population, then a resurgence, and a knockdown and a resurgence, and you never really get on top of the problem, and that's kind of what that was tracking. But it also, another interesting thing about this study that was done by Deanie Miller out of Virginia Tech University is that the monthly costs were actually reduced over time. So you have a lot of upfront costs in kind of getting an IPM program up and running, but over time it can actually run, it can actually become equivalent to the cost of running a traditional pest management program. I just wanted to mention the New York City Asthma Initiative. We work a lot with New York City, and they have done a tremendous job by getting different groups together. And I guess I wanted to say, for you who work in public health, that really the best way to kind of, one of the things that's important for doing an effective pest management program is kind of thinking outside the box and working with other organizations. You need to work with not only the Department of Public Health, you need to work with housing, community-based organizations, residents, and the industry. And they were able to, they've been able to achieve very good results on asthma, on an asthma intervention by using this kind of model. So I guess one of the things I just wanted to leave you with is that partnership is just not just a nice thing for pest management. It's really an essential ingredient. And we found in working with the National Center for Healthy Housing and other partners that if you're going to do effective IPM, you absolutely need to get these key players involved when you're working in low-income housing. I wanted to also just say a little bit about how EPA can help. This is a long website, but if you go to our epa.gov/care website, we've actually put together a document which I think is really good and useful for people that are looking for funding from the government. It's a compilation of all the funding that EPA and CDC provide for community-based environmental health initiatives, and it's chock full of information on different grant programs, how to apply, how much money there is in each of them, when the RFAs are announced, just something that you might want to look into. We also provide training through Rebecca's organization. We've worked on developing a one-day IPM training that we're offering around the country through a system of network training partners, and it's proven to be a very, very good way of kind of getting the partners together and starting IPM interventions. So you can find out more about the training by going to that website. I also just want to say EPA has got technical expertise. You can call me. We have 10 regional offices and people that are interested in community-based IPM in all of our 10 regional offices. And that's it. Thank you.